we had been through so many ups and downs with the show that it wouldn't have been a shocker if the show came back, which thankfully it did. Spoiler alert!
Welcome to EW's Binger Community, where we're taking a deep dive into the NBC cult classic comedy. I'm Derek Lawrence.
And I'm Chancellor Agard.
And today, like the rest of the Greendale group, we're back and we're talking season five. We're lucky enough to be joined by Danny Pudi on this episode, and we'll talk a lot of things with him, including season five's big news of Dan Harmon being back and Donald Glover's departure. But before we get to that conversation, Chance, for you, season five, it's, you know, as the first episode calls itself, Repilot, it is really the show trying to get back to what it was after Dan's departure and missing season four. What's your overall impressions of season five?
I always liked season five, and I think now on this rewatch, it sort of like cemented itself as like my second favorite season on the show. I think I probably Darren had a good argument. It's like for a lot of shows, it's nice. There's something really rewarding and cool about seeing a show bounce back after an off year. And I think we get that with season five in a great way. And so it's just really cool just to sort of see it, to like rewatch it and see this show sort of find itself again and get back to what we loved about it.
Yeah, it's always tough as a show is getting towards the end of its run, right? And like you said, to have a bounce back like they do here. Obviously, it probably helps that everyone felt rejuvenated by Dan coming back. You know, if this was just a traditional fifth season coming off a bad year and just the same people are running the ship, then who knows what we get here.
I know Good Wife did it.
Yeah, that is true. As diehard fans of The Good Wife and Good Fight, we can both verify that. Obviously, you know, like I mentioned, Donald Glover leaving is the big part of this arc in this season. That's something we talked a lot to Danny about, and that's something me and you will dive into as well after our interview. So let's you know, people want to hear what Danny has to say about that, not us. So let's go to our interview with him, and then stay tuned for Chance and I's deep thoughts on season five.
As a reminder, unfortunately, since we're all stuck at home in quarantine, these conversations were recorded over Zoom.
Today we're talking season five, and we're honored to have a Greendale alum, Mr. Danny Pudi, who played Abed. Danny, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Very excited to do this. It's been obviously a strange time, and so we're all doing okay here. Just thankful we're healthy and staying inside. And shout out to all the people out there who are keeping us safe. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so the reason we want to do this, obviously, it's a weird time. You know, people mm-hmm. are inside looking for things to watch. But then also it's a big occasion because perfect timing that Community hit Netflix just in the last few weeks. How have you already noticed like a kind of re-energizing of the fandom and kind of people talking about the show?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I just feel like... you know, our show was always an underdog, and it was always a show that we wanted to share with people. Our fans have been tremendous forever, and it's nice to see this show have a second life, you know, and a third life, and a fourth life. I don't know, but I feel like the show Community, the gift of it, really, in many ways, is that it keeps coming back. It's it's a show that rewards repeat viewing. And it's a show that I'm enjoying right now with my family for the first time, which has been really cool. So I'm happy for all the people who have been discovering Community and thankful that we have another chance to share the show with everybody.
Oh, did you guys start watching it when it got on Netflix?
We did. Yeah. Just last week I was like, okay, what are we going to do here? Homeschool has been quite a challenge. Community came at the perfect time. We're isolating specific episodes to make sure, you know, my kids are eight. So it's they're kind of at this time where... some of the things make sense to them and some of the things definitely don't. We're trying to meet them where they're at. But it's been really fun. They've enjoyed a lot of it. So we're on season one right now with the kids, and it's been fun. I haven't seen the show in a long time. A lot of these episodes I haven't seen since we filmed them pretty much. So it's been cool to revisit them.
Are you also having to then like explain some of the pop culture references as well? Like, okay, now you have to go watch this movie after watching this episode, or...
Yes. There was a great joke that I forgot about in like season one, I believe, where Professor Duncan, played by John Oliver, says cheers at the end of a conversation with Joel McHale. And I walk by as he says cheers, I say MASH. And then he says Fawlty Towers. and it's just a super quick joke. Cheers, MASH, Fawlty Towers. And I had to explain that to my son because he's like, what just happened there? And I'm like, so much just happened there in like 5 seconds. And I had to explain what MASH was, the show. And we do this whole MASH homage in that episode. And so I was explaining MASH to my son, which is really cool. And then we haven't gotten to Fawlty Towers yet, but I'll explain that to him as well.
I can't wait till you have to get to the Dinner with Andre homage and explain that one to him. That's going to be a long conversation to talk about that episode.
That's a long conversation with anyone. I have yet to figure out that episode myself. So, but that's actually my favorite episode of all Community episodes. So I can't wait to share that with them.
So we're here talking season 5. Before we like fully dive into season 5, after my rewatch, I have a very important question for you. Nicolas Cage, good or bad?
It's a great question. Prior to filming that episode, I would have said good, but then my lesson in that episode was that he is neither good nor bad. He is an artist, and he gives us the gift, as I think Shirley explains it to me.
For you, like with season 5, what is the first thing that comes to mind for you when you think about, you know, Community season 5?
I think the first thing that came to mind was that a repilot. It was bringing everyone back again. After season 4, which some people call it the gas leak year, you know, we were very fortunate to keep the show going, and that was miraculous. So I think, you know, Joel McHale, and he did such an incredible job of bringing everyone back and getting Dan and Dan coming back. It was, I think, for all of us, a real treat to just be able to, I couldn't believe we were doing it again. So being back together in the repilot, reading the first script and feeling like, wow, our show is back again, you know? Different, but back in a new way.
We can repilot.
This could be like Scrubs season 9, a revamp, a do-over. Jeff could come back to Greendale as a teacher.
I'm not gonna be a teacher, I bet that's lame.
The second thing that stuck out to me was when Donna left. Both those two things were pretty, you know, they were huge for us. But to be able to send him off and have a nice goodbye in our Hot Lava episode, that was really special, so.
Ahmed!
Those are, I guess, two of the things that definitely stick out to me the most. And then the third thing is Ass Crack Bandit. I just will never forget the Ass Crack Bandit.
Do you remember where you were and sort of how you found out that Dan was coming back? I mean, had that been something you guys had been talking about and hoping would happen, or was that a surprise to you? Or
it's hard to say exactly where I was. There was a lot of conversations that were being had around that time. I do remember hearing the news and being so, so happy and just relieved, just really relieved, you know, for me especially, because playing Abed is such a unique voice, a very specific voice, and not having Dan there, that was really, it could be really difficult. His perspective and his voice is very specific, and it's what made Community so special, I think, in many ways. So I was very, very thankful to have him come back.
Did it kind of feel right back in it? Like you kind of, once Dan was back in the room and writing these characters and contributing to that, did it kind of send you right back to those early days and kind of what you guys were putting together?
Yeah, in terms of memorizing some of Abed's monologues or pop culture references. First of all, I'm not a pop culture expert. Dan, our writers, even our cast, I was surrounded by experts in many ways. So if I didn't get a reference to Farscape or any kind of obscure reference, I know I could look to Jim Rash or Joel McHale or Donald or Allison, and someone would know, you know. With Dan, though, when he came back, you just know with the language, it just came easy, you know, because a lot of it was very true to the world that he built with these characters. So I just remember picking up the scripts right away and flying through them like I did when I first started reading Community, which was this very just specific world and just grateful.
You had mentioned Donald leaving. Kind of what... How'd that come about? Was that something, you know, you guys had talked about, or that had been a conversation leading up to that? Or when it was announced, like, what were those conversations between you and him? Because obviously, You guys had built this great on-screen relationship, I'm sure off-screen as well.
You know, it's interesting. I think we all knew it was going to happen eventually. Our show had a lot of ups and downs, as we all are familiar with. And so by season four, I think we knew it was going to be happening at some point, you know. I didn't know exactly when. I remember vividly when Donald played me some music in his car. This was probably season three at some point that he was working on. It wasn't like one of your friends playing you a mixtape and you being like, oh, that's pretty good. I think this was like Heartbeat. I think that was the song. And I was like, oh, this is like real good, Donald. And so I immediately was like, okay, you're gone. This is, you know, but for all of us, I think we were just supportive of each other, being like, you know, just grateful that we had a chance to make it that far. I think, you know, in two seasons, season one and season two, we did 49 episodes, which in today's streaming age is ridiculous, you know? So we had a lot of time to appreciate each other. And I think being on set and seeing how much work he was putting into other passions he had, I was just really thankful to be there and to be there to support him. So in season five, when it came around and it was time, I was sad, you know, I was bummed out, but I also knew and I was excited for him. And I think we all were. So it was just a matter of figuring out how many episodes he was going to be in. I think that was a big discussion. And I know that not just with the writers, but with all of us, so we could figure out how to make sure we gave him a good goodbye and, you know, to really savor all the time that we had with him.
And I wanted to talk about those two episodes, Cooperative Polygraphy and then Geothermal Escapism, which sort of, when I was rewatching them last week, I was surprised by how the polygraphy episode does a really good job of convincing us that it's like, that it's time to say goodbye to Troy, that it's time for him to move on. Yeah. I guess for you guys, as you end sort of doing that as well, and like doing those scenes, especially in the polygraphy episode, did you guys feel that way as well? It's like, oh yeah, this feels like the moment now, like the sort of the writing sort of got you there, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of nice to be able to grieve in a show where you're grieving about your real life friend, you know, saying goodbye. So we got to say goodbye twice. Any of our sort of bottle episodes, you know, truths are revealed. And so it was a really nice episode because it gave us a chance to really to share how we felt about Donald leaving and about Troy leaving, you know. And then Lava was like going back to what our show became, you know. I kind of feel like the lie detector test episode was what our show started as in many ways, us sitting around the table, being honest, revealing secrets. And then Hot Lava was what our show became, which was this out of this world other show, you know. So to be able to do that, really have a two-part send-off for Donald was great because we got a chance to go on an adventure, get out of Greendale's, normal classroom settings, but also have moments where we're actually truly saying goodbye to our friend. So it was cool.
What was it like for you and Donald kind of developing that relationship? Like, obviously, on paper when the show started, like, those characters didn't seem like they'd be matched and be these great friends. But it ended up going down as, like, a, kind of one of these, like, iconic TV friendships. So what was it like developing that with Donald and getting that chemistry and relationship down?
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think that our relationship was intended to be this comedic duo within the study group from the beginning. And I think Dan has mentioned that I believe Pierce and Troy were originally intended to be this duo. But I think naturally we just kind of had fun with each other. We just clicked. So Donald coming from, you know, comedy, theater background, and me coming from a sketch comedy Chicago background, it's a lot of things just kind of made sense, you know. And I think when we were paired together, we just had a lot of fun off camera and on camera, and it just really worked. And then I think the writers really just started writing towards that, you know, and they did an incredible job of giving us just awesome B stories and C stories where we were just, you know, doing bits, which, you know, may have started in sort of these tags at the end of episodes, but then they turned into, you know, adventures that we were going on, you know, during real episodes, which were, you know, it was super fun, you know, whether it was us, like, you know, doing kick puncher videos or, you know, rapping, crumping, anything. It was just really fun to be able to be like, hey, here's an idea. Let's throw you guys at it. And we came from, I guess, two different perspectives, but we always had fun with it. And so I've always been a huge fan of two-person comedy. So that to me was just a wonderful gift.
Okay, so it seems as though we have a clip. You want to set it up for us?
I'd like to, but I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, we'll just roll it.
Ooh, my name's Jeff Winger. Ooh,
yeah. Hey, I'm Jeff Winger. I'm so tall.
This watch is expensive.
Muscles are everywhere.
Oh, that was really funny.
Guys, what's going on? Where are the cameras?
Oh, we're not filming this.
No, who'd want to watch this?
Oh, guys, it's 6 a.m. Jeez.
We're not going to have him back.
Troy and Abed in
I mean, I guess, and then once Troy left, I mean, for you, what was it then like sort of, what was the show experience like for you? Because now you've lost your main scene partner. Like, yeah. What was it like for you as Danny, but then also like having to then like take Abed on these sort of Troy-less adventures?
Yeah, it's funny. We made a bit of it while we were filming, because as soon as Donna left, every character that was paired with me, we just kept yelling, new Troy. So, which was really fun, you know. And looking back at season 5, I mean, we had an amazing group of pairings, you know. I mean, I started a relationship with Brie Larson, you know, which was with Rachel. And you know, Annie and I were living together in our apartment, and there's a great episode with us. Vince Gilligan's in it too, where we're playing this early 90s VCR video game.
Now, when you hear the word draw, or when you see a square with a color or number matching one of you or your opponent's cards, the first one of you to say bang wins the challenge player's token and the amount of their bid in gold.
What's going on?
Shh. Ready?
Yes.
I'm not.
Me and Hickey, Jonathan Banks, pairing up for some adventures where he handcuffs me to a filing cabinet. There's so much that goes on, and it's a chance for the first time, I think, in many ways, for Abed to really be paired with a lot of different people and different perspectives. So he's forced to grow. He's forced to learn. And that was exciting for me, to be paired up with all these different people. Very uncomfortable for me, Danny, and for Abed, which was, you know, we went from this sort of easygoing, you know, almost like childlike comedic duo, to all of a sudden Abed has to grow up real fast. So it was a lot of experimenting, you know, which was really fun, because I was doing things like Nicolas Cage, Good or Bad, and, you know, dancing on desks, or I should say being a sexy cat on a desk, which is every child actor's dream.
Nicolas freaking Cage, okay? Oh, yeah! Oh, I'm a cat. I'm a sexy cat.
You mentioned Brie Larson playing Rachel, and she had been introduced in season 4, but then came back here in season 5, and Rachel and Abed started a relationship, which was like another side, you know, of the character that we hadn't seen. And obviously it was interesting watching him try to navigate that. What did you like? Did you think it was important to see this side of Abed and kind of explore that kind of relationship for him?
I did. And I think that one of the nice things is, I think early on in the show, we established that Abed is not your typical sidekick character. And I think that in a sitcom trope world, that could easily happen, you know? So it was nice to see ways where the writers, all of us, could stretch Abed and show that Abed could be have these storylines that are A stories. He could have romantic interests, you know. It doesn't necessarily have to look like everyone else's, you know. But he's a person. He's a full person with a full life. And so that was something that was important to me too, to show, to keep showing different sides of Abed, so we didn't fall into something. I think, again, with Dan back and Chris McKenna back, both of them, I guess, challenging things that we had already done, you know, and making sure we were keeping, I guess, pushing Abed in certain ways. So I was very happy for that.
What happened to Rachel? Like, because I think after season 5, like, she sort of like, I don't think she ever like comes back again.
Yeah. They still dated. They might still be dating, I think.
We don't know, right? We don't know. There's a lot of questions of like what happened. I wonder sometimes what happened to me and Hickey's screenplay, because weren't we supposed to be doing a cop show about police justice? I don't know if that ever happened, so that's still out there. You know, these are all movie ideas. These are all movie ideas. We're just riffing. Just riffing.
Like you said, the show was an underdog, and there were so many instances, and I'm sure you guys looked at each other when it came to finale time, and was like, is this it? But like at the end of season five, like, did you guys really think that was it?
I think we were always aware that our show was just about to be canceled, was already canceled, and they were just giving us the gift of filming, or was about to be canceled. So we never knew. And I think that we use that in filming. We use that as sort of like, let's just try anything. Within the confines of a comedy, we were given a lot of freedom. There was a lot of times we were filming scenes that we were like, what are we doing? And it was very quick. And, you know, Joe Russo would say things sometimes like dealer's choice, which meant like just kind of say anything or do anything in this one take, you know. And then sometimes those would make it on television. We couldn't believe that we were doing these tags 2 days before they aired. You know, and then Dan would write something or come down with a revision, or the writers would come up with something on set. And a lot of it was just like, we couldn't believe how lucky we were. Truly, it was a very special show that we all were very aware that could end at any moment. So I think we were always like, is this show dead? You know, is it going to keep going? So yeah, definitely at the end of season five, we all thought it was done. I think we all thought it was done, but we had been through so many ups and downs with the show that it wouldn't have been a shocker if the show came back, which thankfully it did. Spoiler alert. Yeah.
Oh, what else for you stands out from season five? Was there any, do you have a favorite episode from that run? I mean, there's so many great ones, but is there,
I mean, you mentioned the Ass Crack Bandit episode earlier.
I love the Ass Crack Bandit episode. I think overall is when season five starts, the tone is completely shifted from season four and season one. So I think if you just saw a couple episodes from season one, and then you fast forward to the Ass Crack Bandit episode from season five, it's rainy, it's moody, it's just like Fincher film. You're like, what is this show? This is an NBC Thursday night sitcom? That's what I love about season five, is that it is a complete departure from what we were doing in season one. So that episode in particular, I think, is hilarious. I think Allison, Brie, and Joel McHale are so funny in that episode while they're going on this hunt for the Ass Crack Bandit. I love how it's filmed. I love when our show transforms, right? And so there's a lot of episodes in season five that have these automatic transformations where we go from like having these conversations in the study room to all of a sudden it's a full-on caper where everybody's on board. Same thing with the Hot Lava episode, which was Donald's last episode. All of a sudden there is Shirley Island, which the props department, the set designers, our directors did a fantastic job creating these worlds within worlds. I think there's like little things that stick out to me from season five. Like there's I think it's in the Ass Crack Bandit episode where Jim Rash, who's so funny, is standing outside of the study room because he's not allowed in the study room anymore. And then this French song starts playing and he just starts crying. It's super out there, but it like really spoke to my soul. It made me laugh really hard, and I was just so thankful to be part of a show that could do that. There's a small storyline with Ken Jeong, which is one of my favorites, where we're going to see some live theater, and he goes into a theater and does a one-man show, an impromptu one-man show, and then he comes out, and he's told that all the people that were originally in that theater, the theater was closed down, they had all died in a fire, so he thinks he's doing one-man shows for ghosts.
Do you guys believe in ghosts? And if you do you believe what those ghosts tell you about other ghosts?
It's really insane, and oh boy, do I love that bit in our show. Let's see here. I think some of the oh, and of course Jim Rash's peanut rap, which was just oh, it's so good. Those are some of the things that definitely, like, I feel like really stick out for me.
Well, I'm a peanut bar, and I'm here to say your checks will arrive on another day. Another day, another dime, another rhyme, another dollar. Another stuffed shirt with another white collar. Criminals, Wall Street, taking the pie, and all the black man gets is a plate of white lies.
You were saying that there were some bits how, like, sometimes, like Joe Russo would just give you guys, like, a take just to do whatever, and, like, sometimes would make it, I guess, and this is very specific, but, like, I guess in season five, do you remember if that happened as much? Like, is there a moment that was completely improvised on your part or your castmate's part that actually ended up making the cut?
I feel like a lot of that would probably be with Jim Rash, for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, moments like the peanut rap, moments with him during Dungeons and Dragons, especially, where he and his character, Dean Pelton, and Jeff Winger are paired up as father and son. In any episode, when we were around the table, there was always some freedom to play. And, you know, some of them made him in, some of them didn't. But I don't know. It's hard to remember at this point. You know, the actors on our show, our cast was so incredible, wonderful people. And we spent so much time around the table really diving into our specific points of view. So when it came to time to go on any adventure, you really knew where everyone was coming from. And I think that was just, I think so fun. And it's so fun to watch where, you know, we're going to go on an adventure and there's going to be, you know, 8 different takes.
And I mean, the dynamic in the characters is what's so important to the show. But I mean, in season 5, in addition to losing Donald, you guys then got Jonathan Banks as Hickey. I mean, I guess, what do you think having him, sort of both the actor and that character, sort of brought to the show? And what new did they bring, I guess?
His sort of like realism is a stark contrast from what we had with Pierce as a level 5 laser lotus, right? This guy came in as like a person who served our country, a former cop. And I mean, there's a highlight for me right there is we have this amazing tag in season 5 where Donald and I disguise ourselves as a houseplant and a leather recliner, right? So I'm disguised as this houseplant. Donald's disguised as this recliner, and we hide in Jeff Winger's office thinking that we're gonna surprise him when he walks in, right? Instead, Jonathan Banks walks in and makes this really sad, depressing phone call about prescription medicine. We're stuck there in these disguises. And it becomes this really like wonderful contrast about us being such children dealing with these real world stakes. And I think that's what Jonathan Banks brought to it, is this very realness to it. He brought his Breaking Bad self to a show that was a comedy. That tonal shift was highly entertaining.
Let me tell you something, Leah. I wake up every night screaming. Life is unfair, but it's the only thing we get. Yeah, I'll call back later.
That's what he brought. He brought this very different energy, which was great because it was something we couldn't replace with Pierce. And again, when Donald left, you can't replace Donald, you know? And so the only thing you could do is move on and bring in new people and see what else your show can do and see how we respond off them. So
yeah,
another highlight I just thought of is Gillian Jacobs realizing how much power she had with mustard on her face during our meeting.
You're all alive. You are all alive! Look at the mustard on my face, but listen to my words.
Do you think you guys, that Meow Meow episode, I feel like social media was obviously growing and like turning into something crazy, but it's even feels like it's gone up a level since season 5. Do you feel like you guys were kind of ahead of the curve even with that, you know, Meow Meow Beans episode?
Were we streets ahead? Dan, I think so. I mean, I think we were doing things always that were just, you know, in real time following the world. I mean, that's Dan being in real time, also talking and engaging with our fans and being like, what's working, what's not. So yeah, when Meow Meow Beans came out, I think we were all like, this could be possible, you know, and scary and terrifying. And I love how our show and our world was transformed, and, you know, Tim and Eric and Kirkman, they were all in that episode too. And how immediately there's this whole order to that world. So yeah, I don't know. I just feel like our show is definitely aware of fans in the world and just trying to be present with that.
As people roll into season 6, is there like one episode that you're specifically excited for people to see in the final year?
Oh my goodness. I think the finale is really heartwarming and sweet, and it's a chance for us to, in some ways, predict the future again, which our show is always has done multiple times, you know. And sometimes, you know, there are episodes where, like in season 1, where Abed predicts the future, and the study group is doing exactly what he says they would do in his homemade movies, you know. And then season 6, I think we're all predicting where we might be, but we also have these really sweet goodbyes, and Rob Schraub and the directors of our show and Dan and everyone did a really wonderful job of giving each of us a true goodbye. So not many people get that chance. I'm very grateful for that our show had a chance to exist way longer than it should have, probably. But truly touch people in a way that is special. And I'm seeing that again with it being on Netflix. And so I want to say thank you to all the fans for getting us there. Thank you to Yahoo. Thank you to Netflix, to Hulu, to NBC, to everyone who's given our show life. So I'm very grateful. It's changed my life. And I can't wait for everyone to discover their favorite moment of Community.
Also,
no one the more about gel coat.
When the fourth round will...
Don't you call in the...
Don't touch that dial. That's right, we're still calling it a dial here, because it's Emmy season on The Awardist. With the dazzling Oscar season behind us, we are now turning our attention to smaller screens to track which shows are headed to the podium and which shows stopped us in our tracks. Join me, Jared Hall, Entertainment Weekly's executive editor, as well as EW's TV-obsessed staffers, every Thursday starting April 4th, as we share our opinionated hot takes and insight into the Emmys race. The Awardist will get behind the scenes with the creators and stars themselves during in-depth, can't-miss interviews. Follow the long road to the Emmys with The Awardist podcast, Thursday starting April 4th on your favorite podcast platform, and be sure to check out more Emmys coverage at EW.com/awardist.
All right, thank you so much to Danny for joining us. That was a great, great conversation. He was a great sport, so we appreciate him taking the time. Chance, we talked a little bit about season five at the top, and clearly Dan Harmon coming back is going to come to mind when you think season five, also Donald Glover leaving. But for you, what really stands out? It's probably, I would guess, it's Donald and Troy leaving.
Yeah, definitely. I think the two episodes, I mean, we talked so much about this already, but like one, I like the fact, like when I was watching Cooperative Calligraphy, which is very much in conversation with Cooperative Calligraphy from season two, I was surprised by how like that episode makes a really good case for Troy to leave. The last thing I wanted to happen was for Donald to leave the show because he was so good. But I think that episode does a really good job of getting the audience, or at least me, to a point where I was like, oh yeah, it is time for Troy to move on. Like in the span of that 22 minutes, you know? And also I think it's just really funny, just like from Walton Goggins like giving everyone semen to all the secrets that came out about like Annie drugging them and all this. And then geothermal escapism is just like, on the flip side, that's just a classic comedy episode. It's high concept, post-apocalyptic episode that's about Britta trying to get Abed to talk about Troy leaving, which was an interesting way to approach that. I think ends up working, though, and is really cool.
You don't get it. No one gets Abed. I got him a little. This is my fault.
When I think of season five, it just goes straight to the, just like, Abed's admission that he sees lava every time when he thinks of Troy leaving or a world without him. And that is something that's very like moving because of how Danny plays it. And then the show taking that step further and saying how like in order to grow, in order to move on, there has to be some sort of like not death of your old self, but just like a rebirth of sorts, you know, and to let go of the past. So I like the idea of them both sort of falling into the lava in order to be reborn and move forward, I guess.
Yeah, and that goodbye to Troy in geothermal escapism is so raw, and like it really felt like, which a lot of great goodbyes on shows feel this way, is the actors saying goodbye to their friend, right? And that's what it felt like. You could see the emotions there between all of them as they one by one said goodbye to Troy and Donald. So yeah, that's some great stuff in that run. And I think that's why we point to, when we picked who the MVP of the season was, we picked Donald. He's only in, what, 5 episodes of the 13, but it's not just, he does great stuff in these 2 episodes. He's hilarious in the Ass Crack Bandit episode when he's a victim. There, his reaction is priceless. But then also just the impact that him leaving had on the other characters, and particularly Danny Pudi's Abed, and it really allowed that character to go to new depths and in new directions. Donald was great throughout, but really came to the finish line with a great ending.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. I think it's the first episode after he leaves, or one of the first, shortly after, it's sort of, we get your favorite episode of the season, right? app development and condiments. Yeah. I personally love it as well. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's a ridiculous episode. I love it. Why is that your sort of a?
Yeah, that was a few, number one. I think that was like two or three after Donald left. And like I said, I've gone back to where I like some of the less high concept episodes, but then that doesn't mean I don't also love the high concept episodes. And this one was great because I feel like they're almost a little bit ahead of their time with the
Black Mirror, you know? It's like,
yeah, it really was, you know, with Meow Meow Beans.
I think Black Mirror had that episode of Black Mirror that sort of similar to it had aired already, but still sort of like, still, it's still amazing though.
Yeah, and just like seeing who would rise to fives and fours. And then I think this came up with Danny, like Britta having to put mustard on her face for anyone to take her seriously and listen to her was just great. So there's some really fun things in that episode. And throughout this season, it's a great season. It gets to explore a lot of different things with a lot of different people. We talked a lot about it with Danny, but you know, Abed, you know, has a girlfriend. So we get to see how that plays out, you know, with Brie Larson as Rachel. And then, you know, he has an episode where he's paired with Jonathan Banks, who, I mean, I think Jonathan Banks was a great addition to the show for this, yeah, this season. And there were some interesting things explored between Abed and his character.
I mean, I like the idea of sort of Hickey not allowing, not putting up with Abed's crap, and was like, no, there are consequences, like, and handcuffing him to the filing cabinet, and then eventually getting to a place of understanding and getting past that. I mean, that episode is funny too, because like, it's also about, at the same time, it's John Oliver's character is trying to get Jeff to hook up with Britta, and then Chang is performing a play for this audience that may be dead, or the janitor who tells them they're dead, it might be dead, and it's just so ridiculous and stupid. But I remember, I don't know what it was, but it was like just Chang stepping on stage and going, Hong Kong, 1964. It just killed me when it came out.
Well, you called me! Well, then let me be the one to do this!
My mother used to tell a story about how she killed a chicken. Hong Kong, 1964.
Yeah, that was a great, great episode. And another great episode is G.I. Jeff, the G.I. Joe homage that they did, the animated episode. And that's that one that Dan Harmon wanted to talk about when we chatted with him. So here's Dan on G.I. Jeff.
I mean, the G.I. Jeff episode is amazing. As I had said earlier, I just watched that one as a reference point for an animated project I was pitching. And but it's really solid, especially considering we really fretted over that thing. It was incredibly hard to write, and so it was sort of being created while Rob was animating it, and he had this Herculean task of holding up in a basement with teams of kids who needed to make this thing look like an 80s Hasbro cartoon while we negotiated with Hasbro and the rights owners to say, like, well, can we just have Cobra Commander and Duke and all these guys and like track down some of these old voice actors who had done these classic voices? And it was to watch the completed thing now is such a triumph, because it was also usually in episodes like that that have a kind of stylistic concept to them, it was easier to use Abed as with the stop motion Christmas episode, but we were doing the same thing now with the very neurotypical Jeff Winger and tying it into the idea that it was his 40th birthday and that he had done a TV friendly version of maybe mixing pills with booze. Which, you know, it was just, I'm very proud of how tasteful it was done, how silly and funny it is. I hope people that had never seen G.I. Joe liked it, but then again, I mean, if the price to pay for that episode is that that non-G.I. Joe fans are like, this is unwatchable, that's a rare instance of me going, yeah, then it's not for you. And I just really wanted people to feel like they were 10 years old in the 80s again.
Good shooting, wingman, but it looks like Destro's getting away.
Not necessarily, sir.
What? Oh, no, what are you doing? Are you crazy?
Moving past our favorite episodes, you know, we've been doing Beast Student Corner, where we highlight a supporting character, and this one's gonna be two guys, because we, as season five went on and rolling into season six, the school board guys, Richie and Carl, just killed me. Anytime they came on screen, they were the worst people ever, but they would make me laugh. What did you love about those two?
School board, baby.
School board guys,
coming in.
I would appreciate some knocking. Do you know what goes on in here?
Just a heads up, there's an insurance appraiser coming tomorrow.
Your ass is getting appraised, insurance style.
I mean, again, you said they're the worst people and they're borderline incompetent, but just like, that to make them funny, I think. I mean, the best thing was in one of the final tags of the season, like when they have all these like fake commercials for fake NBC shows, it's like one of them, I can't remember what his superpower was, like he was psychic, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Oh god, I loved it. Yeah, I think it just like they really put up some great numbers in the two-part finale, which also doubled as a series finale, as most of Community's finales have had to. And so I thought they were great, especially great, made for great antagonists too in the final episodes where the school's about to become a subway school.
One of my highlights of the season. It doesn't relate to the school board guys, but going back to Repilot. The jokes about Scrubs season 9, as someone who watched all of season 9 of Scrubs, it's funny what Aubrey keeps referencing that year, and that's the year for Scrubs, where basically it was the extra year where a lot of the cast members were in and out of the show, and Zach Braff only did like six episodes. Troy's like, that son of a bitch, after all Scrubs did for him. And it was hilarious, but then also like perfectly laying the groundwork for then Donald to be kind of doing the same thing and leaving. And then it's really all tied together with a Zach Braff voiceover at the end of the episode, which was just great.
Little victories count for a lot around here. Even if you never asked to win in the first place.
And you have to enjoy those nice moments while you can.
See? He does a voiceover wrap-up at the end of every episode.
What else? Kind of any last thoughts for you on things that stuck out on season five?
I mean, I think we have to talk about the David Fincher Zodiac episode real quick. After the Law and Order episode, this is one of their best homages. The level of detail that goes into it. I mean, one of the funniest things, and I have this, and it's and I have this song on my phone to this day, is Ben Folds' Ass Crack Bandit song, which the lyrics, you listen to them, are just hilarious. And as someone who hates puns, I love this song, which is filled with quarter puns.
It said quarter to five, but it was quarter to ass. You thought your plumbing was safe, but your jeans were half a mess. Another coin down the drain. Now that's some change that won't last.
I always loved anything with the Ass Crack Bandit. We talked about it with Allison Brie back in our season 3 episode. She was very mum's the word on who might have been the Ass Crack Bandit. But yeah, they always did these great homages. Like, it was perfectly, it felt like this actually could have been directed by David Fincher. Like, that's how perfect it was. And yeah, that's another standout. Like I said, this is the first season with Dan that they only did 13 episodes. And I feel like they still packed in a lot of great stuff. And like we talked about, it was a great bounce back season. Well, that's all the time we have for season 5.
You've sat through our thoughts on Community, but we now want to hear yours. So to hit us with your favorite episodes, your favorite performances, anything, you can find me on Twitter at Derek J. Lawrence.
And me at Chancellor Agard. Thanks for joining us today. And please remember to subscribe to EW's Binge wherever you get your podcast so you don't miss an episode.
We got one more episode left, so tune in to our season 6 episode. We're going to be joined by Gillian Jacobs, who obviously is amazing as Berta, and she was a delight. But until then, class dismissed.